KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 8 o'clock, it's mostly cloudy, 71 degrees in Atlantic. We look for skies to be cloudy to partly cloudy today with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this morning and again later this afternoon, a high of 84. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. Brought to you by Robinson True Value Hardware, serving Southwest Iowa with the best hardware for over 75 years. Well, 24 hours prior to the deadline for submitting nomination papers to run for city offices in the November 3rd elections in Cass County, Cass County Auditor Dale Sunderman reported that as of 5 p.m. Wednesday, some additional candidates have filed for various elected seats. As we previously reported here on KJAN, in Anita, Ben Doffenbaugh has filed for mayor. Doffenbaugh now faces a challenge from Timothy Miller for the top post in Anita. And Thomas R. Harris has filed to run for one of two seats on the Anita City Council. In Cumberland, incumbent Mayor Nancy Virginia Coughlin filed for re-election, while incumbent Sandra K. Eversole, along with Scott W. Becker, have filed to run for two of three seats on the city council, one of which is to fill a vacancy. In Griswold, incumbent Ryan Askeland has filed for re-election to his council seat. Carmen Sorensen has filed nomination papers to run for the second of three seats open on the council, and no one has filed as of yet to run for mayor. Voters in Griswold will also be asked to decide on a public measure C, which asks if the city should change the mayor's term from a two-year term to a four-year term. In Lewis, John Mosier has filed to run for mayor, while Leroy Easter and Marvin Bradfield have filed to run for one of three seats open on the council. Lewis voters will also decide on public measure D, which asks if an annual levy, the amount of which will not exceed a rate of 27 cents per $1,000 of assessed value of the taxable property, is authorized for providing monies for public library services. In Marnie, incumbent Mayor Randy Baxter is running unopposed for re-election so far. Two incumbents, Alan Cranston and Lori Holste, along with Michael Jensen, are running for three of five open seats on the council. No candidates have filed for the remaining two seats as of yesterday. Marnie voters also will have an issue to vote on. Public Measure E asks, shall an annual levy, the amount of which shall not exceed a rate of $1.50 per $1,000 of assessed value of taxable property in the Unified Law Enforcement District, be authorized for providing additional monies needed for Unified Law Enforcement services in the district. In Messina, incumbent Mayor Linda Reinicke has filed for re-election, while incumbents Kevin and Adam McCunn have filed for re-election to one of three seats on the city council, with Micah Lee running unopposed, running in an appointed position on the council. In Wyota, there will be a three-way race for two seats on the city council. Incumbent John Schwartz is running for re-election, while newcomer Stephen Havens and Jim Fisher are hoping they will be voted into office. No one had filed to run for mayor as of Wednesday evening. And here in Atlantic, three out of four incumbent city council persons have filed for re-election. They include Dana Halder, at-large, Chris Jimerson, 1st Ward, and Linda Hartkopf, 4th Ward. 3rd Ward council person Ashley Hayes had not filed nomination papers as of Wednesday evening. And Dick Cassidy, who was appointed by Mayor Dave Jones earlier this year to fill a vacancy on the council, is currently unopposed in his bid for election to the 5th Ward. No candidate has filed to run for the single open seat on the Parks and Rec Board in Atlantic. Voters here will also have to make up their minds on Public Measure B, which asks, so the City of Atlantic issue its bonds paid with local option sales tax revenue in an amount not to exceed the amount of $875,000 for the purpose of paying for the cost of restoring the historic ballroom theater and creating a multi-purpose facility on the second and third floors of City Hall. Persons wanting to run for elected city offices here in Cass County have until 5 p.m. today to file nomination papers with the Cass County Auditor's Office. Well, the City of Atlantic's Code Enforcement Officer reported to the City Council Wednesday that efforts to get people to comply with city code regarding dilapidated properties and unmowed lawns met with some success this past summer. Chris Erickson said the first thing she did when she was named to the position was raise the city's fees for abatements. That was accomplished with assistance from the city administrator, wastewater treatment plant superintendent, and street department superintendent.
The first task I took on was to raise the city's fees for abatements. The purpose of raising the fees was to hopefully minimize the number of properties that are abated each year, as well as make them current. With the permission of John Lund and the help of Tim Snyder and Gerald Anderson, the prices for equipment were set to an hourly rate. It was agreeable with everyone. This has, in fact, had the desired effect. We were hoping.
The city's code of ordinances pertaining to grass mowing was recently changed to state that a person who was in violation of the ordinance requiring the grass to be mowed would no longer receive a letter in the mail notifying them they were in violation before city crews mowed the property if it was 12 inches at the 1st and 15th of each month. The city would then bill the property owner for the time and equipment. Erickson said that change didn't exactly work out as planned.
The new change did have a few hiccups this year. So instead of going back on piles of paperwork, certified letters, and deadlines, the mayor suggested postcards be made up on a one-time notice for warning the citizens of their violation of grass ordinance and gives them the weekend to mow their lawn before the city would come and mow it.
She said that little change in itself has cut down on the number of properties the city has had to mow. Altogether, there were 45 grass abatements. Erickson said there also weren't too many properties that required cleanup by Erickson and the wastewater treatment plant staff and others, but there was one property in particular with no one living there that took hours to clean up and a struggle with the property owner to get them to comply.
We have not had many major abatements this year. There was one big abatement that took the combined efforts of the wastewater department and the street department. The abatement property was at 808 Birch at the end of August.
And Erickson said the problem in the backyard there wasn't immediately noticed because it was hidden from view. There was a privacy fence that, while maintained on the outside to keep up appearances, was neglected on the other side.
The property had a privacy fence around it, and the property owner had been maintaining outside of the fence, which allowed the backyard to go unnoticed for too long. I sent out two letters to the property owner requesting they clean up the property with enough time to correct the issue. They actually had almost 2 months to fix the problem. I received no response from the property owners. On August 26th, Ron Flory, Clint Rowland, and I spent 3 hours cutting down overgrown weeds and hauling them to the compost. The following week, on August 31st, the street department went in and spent a full day cleaning up the construction debris that were found under the vegetation.
Once all the brush was cleared away from the backyard, a scaffolding used for installation of siding was observed against the house. Neighbors said it had been there for a couple of years. The property owners were identified as Imperial One Properties. It cost the city a total of about $3,254. The city has been in contact with the owners and is working to recoup the cost for the time and labor expended.
There are also a number of properties in town that I am working with the city attorney, David Witherstein, on that are abandoned and run down. David and I drove around town a couple weeks ago looking at the different properties that needed attention to decide how to handle them. I have been gathering all the information required for Mr. Witherstein to move forward with legal proceedings on these properties.
And details concerning next week's special meeting of the Cass County Conference Board were released Wednesday. The meeting, which will be held with regard to the reappointment of Cass County Assessor Brendan Nelson, takes place in the second floor courtroom of the Cass County Courthouse beginning at 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday, September 23rd. During the meeting, the board will hold a voice vote on approval of the minutes of their last meeting on September 3rd, during which they voted 2-1 against reappointing Nelson to another 6-year term. Afterward, the agenda calls for an order to rescind the non-appointment vote. The matter will be done by roll call. A public forum will then take place with members of the public limited to 2 minutes per speaker, during which you may voice your concerns and or questions. The forum will be followed by a roll call vote to reappoint Nelson. The process of determining Nelson's future will include all members of the conference board deliberating together as one. Any discussion by any member of the board will not occur until the motion is made and seconded. Any member of the board may call for a motion to approve reappointing Nelson to a 6-year term beginning January 1st, 2016. If that motion, if made, will need to be seconded, followed by deliberations. Another roll call vote will then be held and recorded by the secretary or clerk of the meeting and taken in the following order: schools, mayors, boards of supervisors of Cass County. Last week, Cass County Attorney David Witherstein said he'd asked the conference board chair, Frank Waters, to reconvene the board to rescind the September 3rd vote not to reappoint Nelson because of how it was conducted. He said there may or may not have been a violation of open meetings laws when the three voting units caucused at the same time. Members of the public in attendance, therefore, had to simultaneously divert their attention three different ways. Witherstein brought the matter to the director of the Iowa Public Information Board, but because a special meeting of the conference board is being held, he thought there was no further need for the IPIB to be involved in the matter. Our news was brought to you by Robinson True Value Hardware, serving Southwest Iowa with the best hardware for over 75 years. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.